Welcome to the Eyes on Conservation podcast, where we bring you engaging conversations about wildlife conservation issues from all across the globe. At 16 years old, Julia Barnes learned that the world's coral reefs, rainforests, and fisheries are expected to disappear within her lifetime. For her, action became a necessity, and the journey to make a feature-length film to inspire and engage others in these issues began. She bought a couple of cameras, learned to dive, and set out on a mission to expose the biggest threats facing the ocean. After 3 years of exploration of these issues, she released Sea of Life, an extraordinarily beautiful film with a powerful message. I spoke with Julia about the ideas behind her work and discovered an awe-inspiring person with passion and grit fighting for the living world. I left our discussion with a new perspective and renewed sense of possibility, and will start and finish this episode with her advice for those contemplating a bold undertaking.
Let the size of the problem motivate you. Do the biggest thing you can think of. Jump in. Don't wait. Don't underestimate your power. My name is Julia Barnes, and when I was 16, I watched Rob Stewart's documentary Revolution, and I was learning for the first time in that movie that the world's coral reefs, rainforests, and fisheries are expected to be wiped out by the middle of the century. And that was just life-changing for me. It was like everything I love and everything we depend on is in jeopardy. So I left the theater knowing that this was what I needed to dedicate my life to, you know, turning this around. And it took me about a week to figure out that I was going to make a movie to try to tackle this problem. So I came out of the theater and I was like, all right, I want to do, you know, the biggest thing I can possibly think of that will make a difference. And I watched a lot of Rob Stewart's talks and interviews online, and he was talking a lot about the power of film, particularly with his first movie, Sharkwater, how that, you know, changed the world by opening people's eyes to shark finning, and shark fin imports to China dropped by 70%. So it kind of proved that film could be a really powerful weapon to create change. So after learning about that, I decided that I wanted to make a documentary to try and change the world. And so I just bought a camera, enrolled in a scuba diving course, and set out to make a movie. And at the time, I had no idea that it would turn into this big, crazy adventure over 3 years in 7 different countries. I kind of just thought I could make a film a lot quicker. I had no idea what goes into it. But yeah, it turned into a pretty crazy adventure and something I think is pretty awesome.
Before we get too far, could you share with our listeners the details of your film?
So the movie is called Sea of Life, and it's a film about the biggest threats facing the ocean. It kind of follows me as a character going on this journey around the world and filming in different locations underwater as well as on land. And it also follows the environmental movement in an effort to try to address these challenges. We traveled to a lot of the biggest protests that were going on at the time. So the People's Climate March in New York, and we went to COP21 in Paris for the climate negotiations there, and kind of comes to the conclusion that, you know, everything we've been doing up until this point is not working. And even in Paris, as they were coming to the agreement, we've got an interview with Emily Hunter basically saying that, you know, this is being promoted around the world as like a huge success for the environmental movement. But in her mind, it's actually a failure because it's not going to be enough to save the living world. So it's really interesting. And I think it's important to kind of have that perspective, because it means that we've got to do something bigger. We've got to step up and as a movement and do more to tackle this.
Where did your interest in the ocean begin?
I watched nature documentaries as a kid. So I watched The Blue Planet like probably 1,000 times, and I was mesmerized by it. But I never imagined that I would have a reason to go into the ocean myself. And the idea of scuba diving terrified me as a kid. So it just wasn't something that I thought I was going to do. But I knew after watching Revolution that I had to have a huge focus on the ocean in my film, because the ocean is like the most important to the survival of life on Earth. You know, what happens there will determine whether or not life can survive into the future. It's the basis of our existence.
So do you like scuba diving now?
Yeah, I love it. It's like my favorite thing to do.
So you had never been scuba diving, and you were like, all right, I got to do this because I got to make this film.
Yep, kind of just forced myself to do it. And yeah, I was scared going into it. I was in a boat before I did my first ocean dive. I was just on the boat going out, and I was gearing up, and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm not sure if I want to do this. I was freaking out. My heart was racing. And then I was really lucky, I guess, because I had the captain on the boat just like wouldn't have it. He would not let me sit out the first dive. So he picked me up by the tank and chucked me into the ocean. And I took a few breaths, and then I was like, okay, this is cool. I'm going to like this.
Yeah. And now you're a scuba diver, which is also quite amazing. Because I mean, mostly I feel like I'm amazed by the things that you've been able to do, and it's really wonderful to hear that you're human, right? And that you have fears, and have had the challenge of having to get over them to get where you wanted to be. Where do you want to be ultimately? Do you see that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think too much about my own life. I just want to live in a world that isn't being destroyed.
And in your travels and interviews and adventures, did you find anything that made you go, well, that's a really good idea?
Yeah, I mean, I think the most hopeful solution there is like, it's almost like the simplest thing, is bringing nature back. Because right now, 90% of the fish are gone from the ocean. 75% of the forests are gone from the land. If we let that life come back, we could sequester an enormous amount of carbon in that plant life, in that ocean life. And in doing so, we would be restoring these ecosystems and creating a world that's beautiful where all these species could thrive. So I think that's really exciting. And Cabo Pulmo in the film was a great example of that. It's a marine reserve in Mexico where they stopped fishing, and within 10 years, the biomass, the amount of life in the ocean, increased by 450%. So now it's teeming with life. It's a thriving ecosystem, and it's absolutely beautiful. So it's really amazing how quickly things can turn around if we give it a chance.
So you watched a film, you were very excited about this concept of this medium as a tool for change.
Yeah.
And you had no experience in filmmaking or storytelling or?
No, not at all. Nope. I was just a 16-year-old kid. Like I was interested in like fine art, like drawing and painting. That's what I had been doing up until then. And that's what I thought I was going to be doing with the rest of my life. So I really had no experience in film or anything like that, but.
I'm just kind of blown away by that concept, mostly because there's a lot of us like, and sure, certainly being 16 is, you know, can stun people simply because just by the fact that you're a young person. But I think anybody, like if they're 16 or they're 70 and they have an inspiration, you know, and to be able to have that follow through and go out and actually make it happen. What do you think inspired you to be able to do that?
It was knowing Rob's story. So Rob Stewart pretty much did the same thing. He started when he was 22 and he went out and made Shark Water. And just the same as me, he had no experience making a movie. So it kind of, you know, proved that it was possible to do it, that you didn't have to go to film school. You didn't have to have a degree. You didn't have to really know anything. You could just pick up a camera and do something amazing. So knowing that was possible, for sure.
So tell me about the individual steps. Like when it started out, your vision was smaller. How did that evolution happen?
Yeah. So when I started, I knew that I wanted to focus on oceans and particularly on ocean acidification, because I think that's the biggest issue facing the planet right now. But I thought in order to make a film, all I would have to do is go to the Keys, film for like a week underwater, you know, gather some underwater footage of the coral reefs there, interview a couple scientists, and maybe I could come back, throw it all together and make a movie. But it ended up being a lot bigger than that because, you know, I would always discover a new scientist who I wanted to interview, a new topic that I wanted to cover that I thought was really important. And then it kind of just evolved really naturally in terms of I was learning new things, learning about new events that I wanted to cover, and then being drawn in a certain direction and kind of going on this journey of exploring the big issues facing the ocean.
It truly is just a big thing to accomplish regardless of where you are in life. But it is kind of, there is something stupendous about being younger, because I think we have this concept that young people don't think about things, and, you know, in a bigger way. And I think what we're all seeing now more than ever is that actually, no, you're a really powerful demographic. And how do you respond to a lot of that criticism of like, oh, you're young and, you know, what do you know, or anything along those lines, that even, you know, I mean, obviously some of the dialogue here is, why are there, what are these children saying about the gun issue in the United States? But they're the biggest voices, and they're strong, and they're powerful, and they're very, very smart. So from somebody who's done something really bold, where do you see the role of young people in the movement toward making a better world?
I think young people are such an important part of this, because we have the most at stake. You know, we're going to be here when the predictions are all coming to be, like 2048, we're predicted to have no reefs, no rainforest, no fish in the ocean. And we're going to be here when that happens. So it's very much our future that's in jeopardy. I mean, it's our present that's in jeopardy. It's just, I think young people like sort of feel it a lot more than maybe the older generations do. And so I think young people are very much aware of what's going on. And I've seen a lot of positive things happening with young people stepping up and doing big things. And I think they also understand a lot more the scale of the problem and the fact that the solutions have to, you know, rise to match it. I mean, it's always kind of been talked about as like a future issue, and, you know, it's our grandchildren, but, you know, for us, it's not. It's us.
You're like, it's me. I'm the grandchild you were speaking of. Yeah. Which is crazy. It is, and it's true. It is very true. What would you say to somebody who has that interest or sees something that they recognize needs a voice and they want to give it? But, you know, I mean, the one thing that impresses me about anyone who does what you did is just having the courage. But where does that come from?
Yeah, I mean, to me, it never felt like I really needed courage. It was just, I was just doing what was necessary. I mean, it felt like I had no other choice. It's like, everything I love is in jeopardy, so I'm not just going to sit here and watch it get destroyed. I'm going to do something about it. I'm going to do everything I can, and that just seemed like the logical action to take. I mean, and there was no question.
Yeah, that makes me want to ask, like, what was your childhood like? just because... Yeah, because, I mean, that's a big thing. I mean, for you to even say, it didn't take courage, I just needed to do
it. Yeah.
Right? That's not, you know, I mean, for me, even, everything takes courage, because I have to feel like, oh, I'm not sure that I'm capable. I never have that sense. So where does that sense come from? This, like, I've got to do it.
I don't know. I mean, like, I grew up, you know, I had a creek behind my house, and I would go exploring in it, and turning over rocks and looking at bugs and catching frogs and chasing snakes. And, you know, that was what I loved about my childhood. There was a park at the end of my street, and there were fields of tall grass. They're not there anymore. The city mows them now. But I would go looking through that at the life that lived there. And there were, you know, praying mantises and grasshoppers. And just, I loved bugs as a kid. I loved frogs and snakes and all the creepy crawlies and worms. And, you know, I still love all these things. I'm in love with life on this planet. And I think every creature is beautiful. And definitely doesn't deserve to be being destroyed and wiped out because of this crazy thing that we've got going on with our culture and civilization and this insanity that's happened in the last few hundred years.
And I get, and the bug world does sort of open your eyes.
Yeah.
I love bugs too.
They're awesome.
Your ideas about how to make a different world, mm-hmm. right? You're saying, you know, we've done a really amazing job at screwing things mm-hmm. up. So what do we start to do to try to, I don't want to say fix it, because I think fixing it isn't exactly correct. I think it's sort of changing course. Yeah. So what's the course that you necessarily, or that you see?
On a large scale, it's really pretty simple. We have to stop the harm, and we have to allow for life to come back to this planet. And I think nature knows how to fix itself better than we do. And it can, and it will take care of itself. But we need to allow it the chance to do so. On the more like human scale, I think education is really important right now, because so many people don't even know that the world we depend on is in jeopardy, and really don't have a sense of the scale of the problem. I mean, everybody's heard of like climate change and things like that, but I don't think anyone knows that the plankton that produce the oxygen we breathe are in jeopardy, or that we're losing the fish and the forests and everything. That we have the potential to wipe out most life on the planet, maybe within this century. I mean, it's crazy. And as
including ourselves.
People, including ourselves, yeah. And as people become more aware of that, you know, you see the light go off in their head, and then they get engaged and they want to help and do something about it. So I think that's really important.
I've worked in climate change for many years, and what I found in the beginning was, talking to people about climate change, I would watch a glaze go over their eyes, because and partly I would get that too, because I'd be like, I can't take. I mean, even at conferences, there'd be groups of people, and by the end of the week, everyone would be just like zombies, because the world just is gone to hell in a handbasket, right? And we were all like, oh my god, we can't talk about how awful this is anymore. So one of the things I tried to do was to shift the conversation somewhat, so that we could talk about what we could do to change course, to look towards solutions, only because that suddenly I found, and I don't know if you've found the same, I'm curious if you've found the same thing, but I found that would just open people up, because a lot of times the idea of, well, doom and gloom, there's nothing we can do. We've done all these horrible things. They would just be like, I can't deal. And you could see them like going through their day or whatever. I've got to do all of these things later, but I can't listen to this conversation because it's too big and too scary. Do you run into that too? Or is that?
I think it's really important that people understand how big and how scary it is, because we need to really feel the magnitude of the problem if we're going to address it adequately. But it's definitely important to understand that it is a solvable problem, that it's not too late, that we can still do something to make a difference. And I think, you know, that's definitely a message that we tried to get across in the movie, that no matter how bad things seem, there's always something that's worth fighting for. You know, it's still, we've got to, you know, fight for the living world. I mean, yeah, it's not like we can just throw up our hands and say, you know, screw it, let the world be destroyed. I mean,
film is looking at how we change course, how, you know, solutions to these problems. How are you developing in your art as a filmmaker, as of this point in time, as an artist?
I don't know. I mean, I don't even think of myself as an artist. Like, I go out, I interview people and collect footage and then edit it all together. I don't know. Like, I don't spend much time thinking about the craft of it. I mean, I have a drone now, so that's exciting.
That is exciting.
I guess that's the next step in upping my game. I'm doing a lot more aerial footage, which will be, you know, a lot of fun. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, the one thing that I really focus on is just getting across the most important information that I can, and trying to get to the truth and get to the root of the problems. And yeah, everything else is kind of, you know, secondary to that. But yeah, it is absolutely important to like show people some really beautiful imagery and to draw people in and make them fall in love with the natural world. That's always a really important part of it as well.
And on your productions, How big are your crews, and, you know?
Oh, it's just me and my mom.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Is she a filmmaker too?
No, not at all.
So she got that bug with you and just went out and...
Yeah, I just dragged her along. You know, I needed somebody to film me and to drive me around. And yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
And then you did all the editing on that project,
yeah,
as well? Good Lord.
Yeah.
Just because I every time I watch it, I'm like, who was the editor? Because this is beautiful. It's really, it's really beautiful. Very well done.
Very well.
Incredibly, incredibly good. And then if did you guys, I mean, did you do any, I don't know, Kickstarter campaigns or anything like that? Just to, I'm just trying to think if there were people that wanted to do something similar. You know, the thing that obviously stands in people's way a lot of times is, well, how do I get funding for this project? Or how do I get this moving? Is there anything that you found was useful for you?
I didn't get funding. I mean, I really didn't do anything in a traditional way. And part of that was, I mean, I looked into funding early on, and it was like every grant out there required that you had a track record, that you had produced at least one film before, or that you had gone to film school. And yeah, as a 16-year-old kid in high school, like I just wasn't compatible with any of the offers for funding. So I like just accepted pretty early on that it was going to have to be self-funded. And so that's what I did. I mean, basically what I tell people is I took the money that I would have spent going to university and made a movie instead.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But so, I mean, not that that helps necessarily with other people, but yeah, definitely. I mean, there's ways of getting it done, and documentaries don't have to cost a lot of money.
Right.
I mean, they can be done pretty cheaply. Cameras are cheap. Cameras are on your phone. I mean, they're everywhere. And, yeah, editing programs are super easy to get your hands on, and people are generally pretty agreeable to being interviewed. So it's not difficult to make a good film. And yeah, crowdfunding is definitely an option if you've got enough friends, I guess, who want to get behind you.
Right, right, yeah. Right. So it is amazing though, because I work with a lot of different scientists in the past. I've worked in science communication, and one of the things that I was always trying to do is to teach scientists how to communicate about the work that they're doing themselves, mm-hmm. because they're out in the field and, you know, and they're in on the ground in those moments. So you know, here's how to capture this and tell these stories. But it is interesting. And I, you know, part of me is like, I wonder if it has something to do with that education, because they were so steeped in science education, you know, that they can't even really operate a camera in a way that makes sense, right? There are times where I'm like, no, that's not even an image, right? Like, no, that's not a meaningful image, I should say. So, right, okay. there's different ways. And that's the one thing about your film that I found really amazing was that the footage is really beautiful. And I do think that I don't think it's straightforward straightforward for a lot of people to pick up a camera, figure it out, first of all. And then second of all, understand how to capture images in a way that come across as meaningful for other people. So in your mind, you're just like, well, that's what I did.
I mean, it took me a while, and I made every mistake possible. You know, I shot footage that was out of focus and shaky and just absolutely awful.
Oh, good.
But every time I did those things, I mean, I learned from it and did things differently the next time. And so, yeah, it took a while to figure out, but then you get the hang of it eventually.
So what was the learning curve, and how much time did you put in to figuring it out?
So it took 3 years to make the movie, and the entire time there's a really steep learning curve. I mean, I think I'm way better at making a film now than I was when I started out. And if I were to start, you know, if I had to start this one over, I think I could do it a lot quicker and a lot better than I even did with the first one. But yeah, I mean, the first year I was just ripping around with the camera and filming things and had no idea what I was doing. And a lot of the footage that I shot early on just got scrapped. You know, but it was important. I mean, it was learning, and I think it's great to learn from experience. Mm-hmm. I think it happens a lot faster, and yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And what editing programs do you use?
I use Premiere Pro.
Okay. So
yeah,
just like everybody else.
Yeah.
And it is, you know, I say that only because, you know, there's, again, your footage looks beautiful, and I've seen some edits that are crazy. Not a smooth story, not a smooth transition. So it is interesting to have for you to have sort of figured that out just by to learn by doing. I'm a strong believer in apprenticeship and sort of learning.
Yeah.
But and the whole idea of learning by doing. Did you work with people at all to like mentors or?
Yeah, Rob Stewart helped me a lot with this movie. He taught me how to use a camera. He gave me a little crash course. He was like, turn this button to adjust the ISO, and this is how you do the aperture, and, you know, all these little things on the camera that I had no idea about before that. So that was super helpful. Yeah. But pretty much from then on, I was off on my own. I mean, I consulted Rob a lot for advice and connecting me with certain people to interview. So he was really awesome with that.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
And then along the way, was there anyone that were you finding that just talking to different people, you were learning different things or?
Yeah. I mean, I was always learning and kind of putting together this massive puzzle about what's going on with the natural world and the systems that we've created and how we're going to turn things around. And so that was always kind of changing in my mind, this really big picture that I was trying to put together. Yeah, but not really anybody who I talked to had much to do with film. It was more learning about what was happening to the natural world.
And so your pre-production planning, how was that? I mean, was that one of those things where you were just like, I'm going to go out and I'm going to do it, and then I'm just going to let it emerge?
Yeah, there was no planning. I mean, I was on a filmmaker panel recently, and they asked some question about like writing your script or something. And I was like, I didn't write a script. Like, I recorded my narration as I was editing. We just recorded it straight into the microphone. I didn't write anything down. I didn't plan anything. No, I think I did things pretty different.
Yeah. But see, I think there's something incredibly beautiful about that. I mean, everyone's like, well, you have to go through all this planning, and planning is helpful.
Planning can be good.
Yeah. Planning is really good. But I also think having that ability to just kind of let, something emerge or, you know, sort of let it evolve as it does.
Yeah. And kind of having the freedom to explore different avenues and to let it change for sure. Yeah.
And I mean, that's the irony in many ways behind planning because I'm always, I had always been encouraging, I was working in the grant world, and I was always encouraging projects they have to have everything planned out for, you know, here's your 2-3 year project, and, you know, what's your plan? And I've always said, okay, that's your plan that you're telling me right now, but things are going to change. We all know things are going to change, and most of the time they do, and sometimes in huge ways.
Yeah, for sure.
But at least you have an idea of kind of generally what's happening. I don't know. I think there's something really wonderful about saying, here's what I want to do. I think that's what I'm a little hung up on, because I'm like, how did you do it? It's because I've worked in this world where everyone's like, get your plan and, you know, spend these years having these conversations. And you're like, I got inspired. I went out and I made it happen. That's just insane to me. That's
right.
Yeah, you're like, simple. Simple. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. Truly amazing.
Thank you.
Yeah. Do you have anything that you sort of really, where you're feeling passionate currently about, you know, an issue maybe that you feel that people maybe aren't aware of that you want to share some about?
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, we can talk about any of the issues in the movie, like ocean acidification, I think, is the biggest issue facing the planet right now. And most people have heard of climate change, and they know about the effects that increased carbon dioxide emissions are having on the atmosphere. But what most people don't realize is that a lot of the carbon dioxide that we release into the atmosphere doesn't stay in the atmosphere. It gets absorbed into the ocean, making the ocean more acidic. And in a more acidic environment, any animal that builds a shell or a skeleton can't form. And so that's most life in the ocean, including coral reefs, which are home to up to 30% of all species in the ocean at some stage in their life cycle. And it also includes plankton, which produce most of the oxygen in the air that we breathe. So now they're being threatened by ocean acidification. You know, 40% of them are already gone, and we're losing them at a rate of up to 1% a year, which is pretty crazy. So ocean acidification is this massive issue that threatens all life on Earth. And I think it's really important for people to understand that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I also think it's a difficult issue for people to comprehend, in part because we're land mammals. And I do feel like, and I don't, do you encounter that? Because I feel a lot of times we're, you know, there's an alienation from the ocean.
For sure. Yeah. The ocean is just out of sight and out of mind.
Yeah.
Most people do not think.
Yeah, yeah, we don't live there. I don't know. Like, does it matter? Right. And that's what I've struggled. And how do you explain why that matters to all of us? I mean, I understand that we should care about these species, these organisms, but what about for somebody who is, it's difficult for them to see beyond themselves. So how does ocean acidification affect somebody who, say, lives in landlocked Saskatchewan?
Yeah, I mean, if you don't care about life that lives in the ocean for its own sake, you should probably care because it affects the oxygen you breathe. So it's literally your own survival is in jeopardy because of ocean acidification. So the oceans are hugely important. I mean, they regulate temperatures and circulation on this planet, and they're like the most fundamental part of the carbon cycle. As they become more acidic, human life on Earth might not be possible. So we got to turn that around.
See, that's a really good, straightforward way to put it, right? Instead of this like really loaded with science jargon, you know, and then this, and then that, and then this. It's just like, no, if the oceans go down the tubes, then you won't breathe. So that's a problem.
Definitely.
Yeah, right? I mean, mostly I feel like that. And I haven't ever heard it put in terms that clear. That's
right.
A really amazing thing. But ocean acidification in general, I think, is something that I really think people struggle to get to wrap their minds around. And how did you try to get that across in your film?
Well, the really cool thing is that I got to work with some footage from bubble vents in Papua New Guinea. So there's an area in Papua New Guinea where carbon dioxide is bubbling out of the seafloor. It's these volcanic vents. And so it's kind of like a time machine. It simulates future conditions if ocean acidification were to continue into the future. And the coral that used to live there is now dissolving and turning to rubble. So it's a really visual way of seeing, you know, what ocean acidification will look like in the future. You can see it happening right now in this area where the ocean is more acidic. So I used a lot of that footage in the movie, and I think that's really cool to be able to show that that's happening.
Yeah, that was a very powerful segment. And do you feel like the visuals have a power more than, say, a lecture or...
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and really just for other people as well. And I mean, do you feel like it just conveys a level of understanding and story in general that it is harder to portray otherwise?
Yeah, I think films really help people connect to an issue because you get to kind of throw everything at them at once. You can show them science and information and images and music and, all these things that really hit people on an emotional level. And, having a conversation with somebody is a really different experience. I mean, like, I talk to lots of people about ocean acidification, and they don't really care. They don't really come away from that conversation being changed. But when you sit people in front of a screen and show them a movie for 90 minutes and suck them into this world and expose them to all this information, it's profoundly different. I mean, it has a much bigger impact on them. And, you know, you're showing them so many experts talking about something. They don't just have to trust you. I mean, they're seeing it coming from all these different sources, and they're seeing it visually. I mean, it's kind of something that they can't argue with.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very true. And yeah, and I do think it has a different, it hits a different tenor, right? There's just like a different note that you're able to comprehend. So what do you think as far as where you're at in terms of you've built this film, you've created it and put it out there in the world, and what's next? What's sort of churning for you in terms of what you think the world needs to know and learn, and what are you learning?
So right now I'm working on a second movie, which is going to be all about solutions to environmental problems, and actually exposing how a lot of the so-called solutions are actually pretty harmful to the natural world. So it's kind of going to shed light on a pretty big scandal in the environmental movement. The fact that a lot of what we've been told we should be working towards is actually detrimental, and that we really need to shift our focus and go in a different direction.
I don't want you to give your film away, but are there any hints toward some of these components, or do you want to keep that sort of under wraps?
I think I'm going to keep it a bit of a secret right now. I mean, hopefully in future episodes we can talk a lot more about this. But yeah, as I'm going in and doing a lot more interviews about this, I kind of want to, yeah.
Aside from this next film, is there anything else that you're working on?
Just getting Sea of Life seen by as many people as possible. I've been like emailing environmental groups and just offering it to everybody who I can, because I want to get it out there. And yeah, that's the one thing I'm not sure how to do. I mean, making a movie was the easy part, but like figuring out how to spread that message is a bit more difficult.
Yeah, getting eyeballs is always a challenge. One piece of advice that you would give to someone who's feeling, basically, you know, looking at an issue, regardless of what the issue is, and saying, I want to do something about this. What's your piece of advice?
Let the size of the problem motivate you. Do the biggest thing you can think of. Jump in. Don't wait. Don't underestimate your power. So Sea of Life is available on seaoflifemovie.com. So you can order a DVD or rent it or buy it online and watch it.
To learn more about Sea of Life, you can find links on the show notes page at wildlensinc.org/EOC147. This episode was produced and hosted by myself, Catherine Dunning. Our theme music is by The Humidors.